I'm Ken Hemmings, and he is Chris Lang, and welcome to another of these regular property briefings. Again, a warm welcome to you, Chris.
Thank you.
In previous podcasts, you explained to our listeners how to ensure they get the most from the commercial property investments, which has been most helpful. However, today I thought it might be worthwhile if you were to flag some of the things that could sour what appears to be a good deal. And so, from your experience, what would readily come to mind to help our listeners recognize these telltale signs?
Ken, it's interesting you talk about these things that could make a deal go sour. In actual fact, probably most of them are the obverse of things that we may have already discussed. For example, I think when we talked about negotiation, I explained that negotiation or a negotiation is not an event, it's a process. In other words, you can't try and telescope it down into just one meeting. Sometimes it has to be spread over several days, sometimes even several weeks. And that, when you know what you're doing, you understand and get the pulse of how the things are unfolding. And so you can either accelerate or slow the negotiation down, depending on what you feel needs to transpire for the deal to stick. However, the other side of that is that time delays can often force a deal to come apart. And it seems that if anyone is delaying for no apparent reason, you've got to start looking out for a problem. Now, whenever there's a valid reason for a delay, the person requesting the delay can usually explain their reasons quickly and easily. But when the people are delaying for no obvious reason, you'll usually suspect that something else is going on. It may be that they've had some other party come into the transaction. They feel they can get a bit better deal out of them, but they want to keep you on the hook. And you see, most serious buyers and sellers will want to move the transaction forward. So for that reason, you just got to, it's a telltale sign if the other party is starting to delay for no apparent reason. And it's things like unreturned phone calls and email. I mean, it just shows that they're not serious about trying to progress this deal with you. Look, I mean, sometimes they can miss a phone call or an email and you know, you'll always understand that and excuse it. But when it happens time and time again during the same negotiation, you've got to seriously look at what's going on behind the scenes. And sometimes, as I said, they're just wanting to keep you on the back burner just in case, or they're afraid to say that they're no longer interested. So time, or your lack of control of the time, is a telltale sign that things aren't really going to plan.
I can certainly understand how time delays by sellers could indicate that a deal is starting to go off the rails. What about some of the other parties to the deal?
Well, again, we've talked about the various parties to the deal and how it's so important to get your consulting team in place. And I placed a lot of emphasis on that. But what is so important, though, is to have the right consultant. I mean, I, prior to putting together the hand-picked team I've got for my clients, some of the best deals have fallen apart because of the lawyers and the way they get involved and the way they frustrate deals. I mean, you negotiate a good deal and it just falls apart between agreement and final documentation. And that's why I've, with my legal team, I insist that they don't write letters. They make phone calls, resolve issues, and then they send the letter, which is generally less than a page, to confirm what's agreed, rather than sending a 15-page letter spelling out all sorts of items which are more than likely to get misconstrued by the other side. So they come back and you spend weeks going backwards and forwards just clarifying things which could easily be resolved with a quick phone call. So a good lawyer, when you're getting tax advice, the valuer, again, one that knows how you operate, knows the your background, or in my case, they know generally my client's background, so that the advice that we're getting is prompt, to the point, accurate, and help move the deal forward so that we don't end up having things go off the rails. The same with the finance broker. I mean, again, you need to have an answer from your finance broker within 24, 48 hours from an indicative basis of will it be lent, the money, and at what rate, and broadly, what are the commercial terms? And so, as I said, it's so important just to get that team right, because the deals, if you don't have the right team, it just falls apart. The things that seem so straightforward suddenly become overly complicated, and you can't control, particularly with a lawyer, the vendor side. But if you have the right lawyer on your side, they can corral the issues as they're raised by the other side. But also, the arrangement I have is that as soon as something unreasonable has been raised by the other solicitor, and more often than not, the vendor solicitor just wants to grandstand and do a better deal for his client, even though we may have sorted out the commercial terms, he just wants to improve upon them. So my solicitor will ring me, tell me what the problem is. I can then ring the agent will ring the client, the vendor, and say to him, look, you understand this deal is going to fall apart because your lawyer is doing this, that, and the other thing. And invariably, the vendor will ring the lawyer and say, listen, pull your head in. This is what we've agreed. Let's just document the deal and move on. So it's having that access and ability to move around. But what I'm saying to you is that unless you do have that, choosing the right consultants, you run the risk that once the professionals get involved, it can fall apart. So you've got to, they have very strict guidelines as to how you want them to operate, and you want to know if there are any issues, because this is with the best intentions and having negotiated the best deal, if you don't have the right consultants, it will certainly start to fall apart.
What about those aspects actually under your control?
Yeah, look, a few times we've talked about the importance of having an agenda. That's the number one item in my masterclass on negotiating. And it's important that you frame that agenda, because whoever does that controls the discussions from there on. Now, you remember that in your initial offer, you are including things like the purchase price, the amount of deposit, the way the deposit's going to be paid, the settlement terms, and the due diligence period. Now, there might be other items, but they're the main ones that are the issues. Now, the advantage of you writing that letter up front is that you scope the terms that you want to negotiate on. And by having a number of balls in the air, it means that their focus is not solely on price, which is where most negotiations start and finish. And as we've said in the past, when that happens, one party has to lose if the other is to win. And that's not a good way to conclude a negotiation. So by framing the agenda and having various balls in the air, it means that you can distract their attention from just the price, because obviously they don't want a 120-day settlement. They would like closer to 60. Well, you might be happy with that, but while they're winding you back on that, you're also winding them back on the price. Likewise, with the deposit, you offer a 5% now, 5% when the exchange of contracts, so, or the due diligence period is complete. And likewise, your due diligence period starts at 21 business days. And with the team I've got, you can actually do it in 7 business days. Now, what I'm getting at is that people that don't have a structured basis for going forward, things slip through the cracks. And all of a sudden, you realize that you have gone down the path and have forgotten to include a due diligence period. Now, if you raise it at the end, that could be a deal breaker. And that's when you start to see the deals going sour. But we've raised at the beginning, we framed the terms of reference. And at this point, the vendor is not concerned about the due diligence period. They look at the price, the settlement, the deposit. They're not concerned about the terms of the due diligence, certainly the period. So they're trying to wind that back, sort the price out, get the deposit up, bring in the settlement terms. But by putting it in the initial letter, when you get to the very end, they think they've done a deal. They've tended to overlook the scope of your due diligence, which if you look at the standard letter that I use, is quite broad. But the beauty is that when you write your final proposal, which is exactly the same format as the first one, but with the latest and final terms agreed on price, deposit, settlement terms, and the due diligence period, it doesn't come out of the left field as a surprise. It's there already. It's just an adjustment to what was previously submitted at the outset, and therefore is more likely to get through without any objection, and therefore provides the basis for final agreement and also the basis upon which the contract will then be drawn. So there's less likelihood of the deal falling apart between final agreement of the commercial terms and the appearance of the contract of sale that finally gets executed.
What about things that emerge after you've settled on the property?
Yeah, the sort of things that come out after you've settled on the property, if you don't address them as part of the negotiating process, are structural problems, mechanical problems, the fact that there might be non-compliance as far as the essential services are concerned. Now, again, this is why we build the due diligence period into the negotiation, so that you can address these issues. And as I said, while we might have a 7 business days or 10 business days ultimately to do our due diligence study, the team I've got will go straight in as soon as the exchange has taken place of contracts, and then within 48 hours, I will get back an email, a 1, maybe 2-page email, spelling out the inspection, generally saying it comes up smelling roses. There might be 1 or 2 issues. If they're insignificant, they'll comment accordingly, or they will raise them and put a dollar figure beside their rectification. So I can then go back through the agent very quickly, not waiting till the last minute in the due diligence period, and raise these issues, which may be structural. I mean, I remember one, there was a door jam in a warehouse such that when you closed the door, it didn't close properly. Well, it's a brand new warehouse. The developer has a certain pride, and they're not about to allow their building to pass at settlement if it's not in tip-top condition. So without question, they went in and rectified it. But there are always little issues that arise, most of which can be dealt with on the spot, particularly if you've responded quickly. But again, if you don't build that in, that then falls apart after settlement and impacts upon your bottom line going forward as the investor and owner of the property, because you have to then dip into your pocket to rectify those sort of issues, which, you know, okay, the deal doesn't go sour. It certainly is not profitable, or as profitable as it could have been if those items have been addressed, rectified, and dealt with prior to the contract going unconditional during the due diligence period.
Anything else our listeners should know about? I mean, under the category of surprises.
There probably is one thing that it doesn't come up that often, but it's something you need to be wary of, and that is site contamination. Now, it's generally with properties that have been used for some kind of petroleum or chemical storage, and you need to be aware that there could be some contamination issues. Now, invariably, most owners, if they are concerned when they're selling the property, will have what's called a phase one environmental report. Now, that does a limited number of bores on the site, and it gives a report as to whether there had been any contamination in the buildings. It will flag if there is any asbestos or other items of concern. And it may be, when you have your expert read it, that you have to go to a phase two, which is a much more extensive report and study done on the property. Now, it's not too much of an issue, but if you have any concern whatsoever, it is worth having it done, particularly if you're planning to develop the property over time. Because once you demolish the property, you're going to have soil tests done. And the remediation work can be very expensive in having to dig down and remove the soil, and then you've got to dispose of it and build up the foundations in a manner that you can then construct whatever you want to build on the property. So it's certainly an issue. I don't want to scare you with this, but it's something that needs to be addressed. And as I said, so long as there is at least the phase one report, environmental report, you have some protection and understanding of what's involved. And look, I realise some of this sounds a bit negative, and that's not the intention. Commercial property is very lucrative, but you need to go into it with your eyes open. And all I'm trying to do is just flag some of these issues, and most of them will be overcome by having around you that consulting team. And I know I keep harping on it, but whether you choose it or use the one I've put together, it doesn't really matter. So long as you have a top-class, professional, fast-acting team that are looking after your interests and helping you put the deals together, in fact, sometimes even bringing you deals, then you will be in top shape. And the other thing is, you've got to remember, the reason you have those teams and the reason you pay for their advice is that if things do go wrong, well, then you have some recourse against them. And they have PI cover, professional indemnity cover, so that you can, if you need to, make a claim if you in fact suffer a genuine loss. So it really turns out to be cheap insurance, but most of these issues can be addressed by your team, apart, of course, from those under your own control. And by doing that, it means that you can sleep at night and have very little risk of a deal actually turning sour on your watch.
While what you've covered may seem a little scary, the important thing is to be aware in advance. That way, you can avoid these hiccups and ensure you reap the considerable benefits commercial property provides. You know, this really has been most helpful. So, thank you.
Well, once again, it's been a pleasure.